This is the Pete and Sebastian Show with Pete Corielli and Sebastian Maniscalco.
What's up, everybody? Today, big guest. We got
big
David Spade and a new show called Snake Oil playing up on Fox. If you want to check that out, it's a game show. It's a guy that basically grew up on SNL, and we get into some SNL stories. We get into who his favorite funny people are in his life, and talk about Just Shoot Me a little bit, the show that he was on. Right. Talking about being a stand-up in today's world. He said something interesting. He said that a lot of people don't know him as a stand-up, although he started as a stand-up and then kind of took a career in movies and film, and now he's getting back into stand-up. So, no, you're a big fan of him, and obviously showed.
Yeah. Did you think so? Did it?
Yeah, no, it was very gracious.
It was even not too much, though, right?
Well, the assistant was like, that was very, made David feel really, I could tell it made David feel really nice that, you know, Pete kind of fawned over him.
Well, like I said, man, he was one of my first real heroes, and I even had a Tommy Boy poster on the wall. I thought he was hilarious in it. And, you know, we talked about some other things, too, aside from SNL and all that, a little bit about the hair, the shades. And, bro, Sebastian asked him if he ever had a encounter with Tommy C, Tom Cruise.
Yeah, which we talked about after the show, and I think I want to make this a segment. Talking to celebrities if they've ever had a Tom Cruise experience. And so far, it's been Grillo. It's been who? Spade.
Spade, Grillo, Jay Moore.
Jay Moore. Yeah. So three guys have had this basically almost the same story about this guy Cruise, right?
Right. It's like, you know, how many people say they saw the UFO and are giving you the same description, right? Over and over. Do we open it up to regular people daily? Like, you know, like a guy going, I owned a deli in Kentucky and Tom Cruise came in one day, took his helmet off and ordered a pastrami sandwich.
Yeah, that's a good point. We'll be fielding these comments on Patreon. So if you do have a Tom Cruise story and you want to give it to us, the only way really to do that is through the Patreon.
Someday, I'm sorry to interrupt you, he's going to come up those stairs with the helmet in his hand. What's up, guys? Let's do this. I'm psyched. Someday he's going to come in through here. And that is the last show.
What if he comes in? What if we get this guy in 2 months, right? That ain't going to be the last show. What I'm worried about,
that's a good point.
If this guy comes in here, if this guy comes in here,
right,
and we're in the dark, let's say we're in the dark, we have no lights on, he comes in here, the whole studio will light up just on his electricity. I mean, that's how I feel. Like, this guy is glowing, right? Yeah.
Do you think if a room is dark and he's in the room, you can feel it? All right, this is another fucking
thing. I don't know.
You just said he can light up the whole
room. He can. So good stuff here with Spade, and we're really looking forward to you guys checking this episode out.
It's just the radio. Don't you remember you told me you loved me, baby?
What's up?
Hey, man, Pete.
Good to see you. What's up?
Pleasure to meet you, man.
See? Yeah, I know that thing.
Is this how we do it?
Okay. Yeah. Yes, listen. We got a lot to ask you, to get into. Thank you for being here.
Big time, bro. Thank you.
Pleasure. Big, huge fans. I want to ask you about the sunglasses coming in to indoors. Is that planned where you came in with the sunglasses and then take them off for the podcast?
No, it wasn't. But then when I was in the bathroom, I go, I'm going to put them on when I walk in. That was planned.
Oh, okay. So you took them off in the bathroom or you had them on?
And then I put them, I go, oh, I forgot my sunglasses. And I go, I'm going to wear them to walk in.
But and then, see, now you wore them to come in because it looked cool. But do you not think, when do you think you're at a level where you're like, I'm going to keep them on for the whole cast? Because they looked so cool.
I could have kept them on.
If you would have kept them on, I would have gone, wow.
My man.
I know, I fucked it up.
We could redo the entry.
Because I wear them sometimes. We do our promos on our stupid show, and Dana wears some. And then every single person just talks about that. Why the fuck do you guys have? I'm like, aren't you inside? Shut up. No one asks Jack Nicholson why he has on. They go, yeah, because he's cool. So it's a little bit of that. But then I thought it was kind of a bit. It was like 20% of it. Because I was in the bathroom and I go, I'll walk in and they'll be like, look at this fucking guy thinks he's Elvis. Because I have a Hawaiian shirt on. But I did this on purpose. This looks good on me.
But you did the half pop in and said, I'll be right there.
Taking a dump.
And we were both loving the shades.
Yeah,
That wasn't on purpose. Because I just walked through and your buddy walked us in and then we got upstairs and I was, because the house is so rich, I was just like sort of taking it all in. It's mostly stairs so far. But then, and three housekeepers within
By the way, we worked together.
Yeah.
Nah, not buddy yet.
Not there.
No.
Just you said buddy.
Colleagues.
Oh.
Yeah. Associates. But if I look this pale.
Getting closer. We had a nice lunch today.
Heather, if I look that pale, blow my fucking brains out. This is me with, I think I had some powder on because I just did a show.
No, you look great. You look great. Pay no attention to that
screen.
Don't
go by.
Yeah, that's not broadcast quality.
That looks like there's a Pruder film. All right, go ahead. So
we want to also ask you
one more question.
That's it.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I'm not gonna lie, man. I'm a little
that's
nervous.
Good, for real?
When I first started comedy, I was friends with.
Talks about it.
What?
He's like, I'll just take a second.
Take a second.
No, this is where I go first.
I like
this.
Oh,
this is where I go first.
All right. Anyway, I got to meet you at Saturday Night Live when I was about a year in through Brewer, and I've been a fan since like the beginning, man. I mean.
Oh, that's
from,
thank you.
From the bit about you two with no more. And you two's yelling, no war, but my suck job seat.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, great, man. Such a great pleasure.
You know,
to meet
thank you.
Ahead,
that was back in the old days when you did something on HBO. It really stood out because there wasn't much. There was not much game in town. There was networks. I didn't think Fox was around yet. Yeesh. But there was just HBO. And so they'd have a special like Eddie Murphy or the ones like we grew up on. I think you grew up on them too. And then now and then. And then they did Young Comedians. So I did that. I think that was a bit I did on that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they had to jam me in there because I missed it 3 years in a row. They kept picking other people. And I was like, fuck, man, I'm getting too old. And they're like, oh, they picked Richard Belzer this year. I'm like, isn't he 90? Like, you know, it was a Young Comedians, but they didn't really go by that.
And then I was like,
I'm actually young. So I was like 23. I finally got on. Dennis Miller pushed me on. I had my managers were producing it. So they all jammed it from five people to six. So everyone tightened their set, which, you know, comics love. Hey, if you took a few minutes out of your act, he could go on. They're like, go fuck yourself. I don't give a shit if he goes on. So I did it and it was super fun. And you know what's good is you didn't ask a question and then I answered a long one.
I know. It's like amazing.
It's
how
an
you
hour,
just,
dude.
Like,
we
got slide, but that's got the special where you did the bit about Advil or something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's not going to work for
New
me, print. Trapper John. You could see the characters that came out of Folly.
Got Newprin joke. I really fucking ran with that. Get hit in the face with a baseball bat.
Are you kidding me? Yeah, the day I get cracked across the face. Full swing with the Louisville Slugger, and my doctor tries to push two puny little Newprin on me. But it's a Newprin and they're yellow, and you can swallow them easy, and you can. Let me tell you something, all right? You better hook my ass up to that morphine IV pronto, Trapper John.
But now I see the billboard I'm driving yesterday. I see it in the suit for the snake oil salesman.
Fucking
right?
Clown, yeah.
That's what I was. I think you look great, and I think you're going to be great at it, but I was wondering how you feel about the whole thing.
Well, I know how you feel from that question. he goes, are you our JonBenet Ramsey? I'm like this. Come on. You know what it was a 9-hour photo shoot where I look cool as shit, Heather will attest. And then at the end, just this clown outfit, just for the one shot we'll never use in a trillion years. So I did that, and then they're like, just, can you look fucking ridiculous? It might help. So I did it. I go, that's not really.
Is this your idea?
No, it was Will Arnett. He came to me. I did that show Smartless, and afterwards he goes, you might be good for this. I just never thought of doing a game show. It sounded like kind of a funny idea. The idea, I think he said, was like Shark Tank, sort of a comedic Shark Tank, and then it's two products, one is fake. And so these contestants come out and they have a celebrity advisor that helps them with their business, you know, picking whatever, just a reason to get a celebrity in there, which always helps. And then they pitch and they go, they get like 30 seconds to ask questions, and then they go, you got to pick which one's real. And it was harder than I thought. It was more fun than I thought. So that part came out good. Crowd got into it. It got tense.
Is it a product? Like literally like something you hold up?
Mm-hmm.
See, like, that's great. Because, you know, when I riff, I have a 10-year-old daughter. Sometimes like she'll find my one hit it, and I got 10 seconds.
Of the fake thing that it is.
I go, it's a stamp. But when I do letters, I do a little stamp. Can I see how it works? Not right now. We're busy.
Can
you tell usually? Are you like,
no.
Really?
And I go, don't tell me. And then, because I kind of jump in a little bit, and there's like, honestly, legal problems with that. So I say, I can't know. And then what, the real problem is they're stupider than you think. So you see one and you go, well, that's ridiculous. It's the next one. Then the next one's even dumber. And you go, so one of these is real. And then the hard part is going, well, God damn it. So, and then they ask questions and you got to stop. And they're like, so no one knows anything. And then they ask me and I don't know. And the advisor, and then the crowd starts screaming what they think. So the only good part is like, not the only good part. When I would go on the side, Heather and, you know, like hair and makeup's on the side, when I'd come during commercial, they'd be like, I got two of them right. But the other one, and they're all like, so they got into it. So I go, oh, you're not bored? Oh, okay. So at least it, who knows?
Yeah.
It's up against America's Got Talent. I can't, angry about that.
Yeah, but,
It's year 10. They can't even find 10 people to stand on that stage anymore. The guy. That's the one, right?
This is cool.
That's cool.
I like it.
Yeah.
Never
like
be
the,
seen.
I like the billboard.
Oh, you do?
I do.
It fits snake oil.
Yeah.
Well, what are you wearing on the show?
It's more like that. It's more, that's actually cool, but on the show, I wear.
Something you wear out, though?
I just got a text, put them on.
Oh man, boom.
You got it. You're getting text?
It's no, literally a different interview.
Unfortunately, no more questions. That side shot, I look gross. I look gross in almost every angle. I don't know what's going on. It's almost mathematically impossible. Look at that shit. Oh, look at that fucking shit.
Nah, I disagree.
You like that when I don't slump? Hmm? Chicks? Go ahead. Okay. AGT, those morons. I love making fun of the other shows. I think because they make sure they give you some tough competition.
Right.
So America's Got Talent is the 12th year. So it's literally like five people up there like doing hand signals. I'm like, we're out of talent. It's over. We've done them all. They're done. No one's talented anymore. We got them all. We found the winners every year. Now they're sorting out. Starting to slow down.
Because
I watched it last night. Did I tell you that? She's not listening.
Listen, we watch HGTV, you know, love it or list it. So, I mean, that's where we're at in this world. I'm on a Friday night. I'm watching people buy a house. Shitholes, too.
Yeah.
Not even like nice houses. It's some dump. So.
Yeah. It's fine. If it keeps you involved in somehow, it's not talking about it too much. But, you know, it's not based on any other show. It's just a new show. So it's very hard to get those put together, like how many contestants, how much do you bet, the mathematics, how it works, the legal problems, this, they have to come up with all these products. We film an infomercial for each one we make up with, you know, improv people. So we show what the product is, so you can figure it out a little bit. And then at the end, then you bet and lose or win. Yeah, there's me. That's in front of the Chateau, folks.
Yeah. That's where I saw it.
Maybe
you've
heard about it.
We just saw you did a video.
Yeah, you see that shit?
On Instagram.
Yeah. You see that?
Yeah, you had the same shirt, the whole thing.
You've been famous for a long time, man.
Yeah, so we...
Too long.
Never too long.
People are getting angry.
Never too long.
So we were talking about the crew that you kind of came up with on SNL, and Pete was talking about this earlier. I don't want to steal your thunder
No,
here.
Please.
But it was kind of like our kind of rat back of today. Right?
Yeah.
Pete, what were you talking about? Sandler and...
Yeah, like I wrote for Kevin on like his last two sitcoms, like Kevin Can Wait. And like, for example, he gets Sandler and he's talking to Sandler and Sandler's like, we should get the guys. And Kevin's like, I remember Kevin being like, I wish we could get the guys. And then Adam's like, I'll make a call, you know?
Yeah.
And like, you were busy because I remember they specifically were hoping to get
to
you.
Oh, to do that show?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And like Chris came on and Adam came on. But it seems like Adam's like the Sinatra, and like, you know, it's like that's almost a movie in itself. Is like Adam's gonna make a movie, and then we cut to, it's almost like Armageddon, where you cut to each guy and what he's doing. You know, like, you know, whatever you're doing,
they
you're hiking through the woods, you get the beeper. Where are we going?
Yeah,
and you're there.
It is kind of like that's kind of the way grown-ups was, and And those even those other movies, if any of us is doing a movie, you can usually call the other guy to say, do you want to come just do this? Well, you don't put them out too much, but you say, come just do, and you try to make it funny for them to come score some little thing. It is fun to get with those guys, and you want to make it funny, but I thought those wound up being good family movies, you know?
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, you guys just go on vacation. I mean, unfortunately, it is fun. And people are mad, but it's actually, we do stuff. But the funniest part is Adam has to wrangle us like cats. Yeah. And so if it's, you know, seven of us, it's like Rock and Selma Hayek and Maya Rudolph. And we're all waiting. We all have our sides and drinking coffee. And they're like, okay, let's do one. And then they go, Rock. And he's like, oh, that's me. And then he's like, dude. And I'm like, well, we all have one line in every scene. So you're either cramming if you're in a real scene, or when you just have, it's peppered throughout, you sort of space out. And then, he's like, guys, we fucking go. We got to get it before noon. We haven't even done one take yet. So he kind of keeps us in line, but it's definitely a good time to do those.
Yeah, it sounds like an Ocean's 11 back in the day, you know, where like, you know, do you guys do shows ever at night? And
no, we should though, because I went out with Adam's tour and now he's doing it again, but I can't do it because I just started mine again. You go on the tour a lot. He goes on a lot.
Yeah.
I play the theaters that if the theater had a baby, and then I'd play that theater because he plays the big ones. And Adam plays big ones. And but it's fun to go out. I just went out last weekend, but it didn't sync up with his because he's going out a lot during the week and I'm going on weekends. I can't do both. It's too hard.
Yeah.
The Chris Farley movies, is that something that you guys together said, okay, we're going to do movies together? Or did someone come to you guys and go, put you guys in movies? You guys are a great team together just through the SNL years.
We were on SNL. We were pretty close. We had some fun there. We were just sort of gravitated to each other. He's a very fun, likable guy, and he would cling on. You know, he was out of Wisconsin. I was out of Arizona. We were all sort of out of our element. We weren't New York, East Coast people. And just had a good time, you know. And Chris Rock lived in Brooklyn, and everyone was kind of separated. So he and I fell together. But we were all good friends. So we do that. We're around the office goofing around. And then he's obviously blowing up way quicker than me. I took me forever to even get much going there. But at least Lauren saw that there was something going on off camera that was funny and interesting. So he assigned Bonnie and Terry Turner, the two writers from the show, why don't you write some movie about these guys? I have a deal with Paramount and we'll do it in the summer. And I talk about, you know, having some say. He just says that. And we're like, we have a green light and now we're backing into shooting without an idea or a script. And it's usually so hard to get a movie made that they come up with one called Billy the Third. And that's what it was called. It was a Midwestern. That was a funny title because it's about Farley from the Midwest. His name is Billy and his dad is Big Bill. And Sandler's doing fucking Billy Madison. So we're talking about the movies and we're like, oh, yours is called Billy Madison. And we're all doing them in the summer. So I remember going to see Adams and he was doing his in Canada too. And we were doing Tommy Boy. And I'm like, we can't both be Billy. And so he was shooting first. So we said, we'll change ours. And then it was so hard to think of another title because Billy the Third sort of was good. And I didn't like Tommy Boy when they came up with it. I remember we didn't come up with it until after we shot. You know, they say Tommy Boy in the movie. Hey, Tommy Boy. But that wasn't the title. I thought it was kind of goofy. It was called Rocky Road. It was called Big Time. A bunch of titles and poster mock-ups. And then I just got a call one day. It's Tommy Boy. Right before, you know, before we're doing press or something. And I'm like, oh, really? All right. But now I couldn't picture anything else. But back then it was, and your question about Farley, it just seemed to work out on that one. And then Lauren said, let's do another one next summer. And then that turned into Black Sheep. He was contracted to another movie. I was not. So it in a crazy turn of events for him blowing up to such a big star, if I said no, he wouldn't do it, and he had to do it. So they offered him Cable Guy right before for way more money, and it was a pressure situation because the writer, Fred Wolf, worked at SNL. I was at SNL, and Farley was there, hair greased back. I don't even know about this one. Maybe it's something for next summer. And I didn't know about Cable Guy. And I'm like, oh, really? I go, oh, this is going to be great. I haven't even read it yet. And he goes, well, I'll read it, you know, see how you feel. And I'm like, oh, you just say, I want to do Cable Guy. I'd be like, well, fuck, if you're getting that much money, yeah, we'll do this another time. But I didn't really know the situation that I heard about. And I'm like, oh, now I feel horrible because if I read it and like it, I go, I can just be honest. If it's shitty, I don't want to do a shitty movie. Let's do it. We'll push it. Even though it's my own guy, our buddy, writing it. And I read it and I go, it's pretty funny, man. And it, the problem was, it turned out to be pretty good, in my opinion, but the director took 40 pages out right away. I mean, once we worked all out, oh, we're going to do it. I said, we riffed on the first one. We're just going to make up shit anyway. We're already halfway there. It's pretty funny. It's a good scenario. And he's like, all right. So we do it. And then the director, there was problems. And then we're ripping stuff out of the script. Then Fred was banned from the set. And then we don't have one of the writers we used to riff with. And now we're making up stuff. But they kept us apart in the movie. It's just so many things that way harder than it should have been.
Yeah.
One worked on a small scale. You know, it turned out to be a big movie over time where they made money on video and stuff. But it was by no means like a huge movie like today where you go, oh my God, this movie like Barbie. It was just number one, but good for us, basically. And then it just sort of had a life after that. And then, but Black Sheep, man, that was a tougher uphill battle and came out and it came out number one and did all right. But I think we all wanted more from it, you know, even the crowd. And so after that, he did Beverly Hills Ninja. And there was another one called Edwards and Hunt. He did with Matthew Perry that I think was for us again, but it was time to not do one together. Like, let him get somebody else. I'll do something else and blah, blah, blah.
Casino. Cause seen it already. But I liked it better the first time I saw it when it was called Goodfellas.
Coming from stand-up, live audience, SNL, live audience, and then you go to movies. Did you have trouble adjusting to whether or not this stuff was funny because you're not really hearing any laughter? I know I've dealt with that, like, oh, the validation is the laughter from the stand-up. Now you're doing the movie and you don't get that. Is that all in your head, or are you just, oh, no, we're having...
It's tougher because that's why you're doing so many takes. You're like, You think it's good, you know, you do it and you go, I like that one. And, but it's pure gut instinct because the crew is not allowed to laugh. No one's allowed to laugh. Sometimes when they say cut, people laugh. You've been in that situation and you feel like that's a good one. Now you don't even know if that's the one they're going to use. Now it goes over an editor. There's so many ways to fuck up a movie. It can be funny when you read it. Like I've done ones that don't work and they're like, why'd you do that? I go, well, it's not starting shitty. I mean, it's usually starting somewhere in the vicinity. I'm not getting the best scripts, let's be honest. So, especially back then, it's Will Smith, it's, you know, Vince Vaughn, or whoever's the biggest star is getting them, Sandler. By the time I get them, they're so mangled. Like, people have said no, but you can either write one, so we write Joe Dirt or Dickie Roberts, or you take one that's been passed around, it just had some stink on it, like someone turned it down, and then it just sat on a shelf. So you go, this is still good, we can revive it, and just, you rely on make it funnier and being out there and making it funnier. And then you hope it's good. But I'm not given like a perfect script going, this is great, just say it and it's a hit. That's not really my whole career, you know, unfortunately.
Well, but one of the best sitcoms, man, you were on Just Shoot Me and every line, boom, boom, boom. And that's a place, as I said, writing on a sitcom where you do still get that big laugh in the moment.
I still got it.
I'll have the pharmacy send over some more cream.
And yeah. Did you enjoy, it seemed to me when I used to watch it through his ears, because as I said, I've always been a fan of you, that you seemed to be enjoying that part of your life when you were making that
show. I did
show.
Like it. I was lucky because I left SNL and I didn't, you know, you don't know what to do and everyone just walks off a fucking cliff and disappears. It's very hard to keep the balls in the air. And
it's crazy though how you guys do that show and you walk away, like that's like just the starter. It's what you do after that show. You judge yourselves by, which is crazy. That show is the accomplishment for some.
Yeah,
I mean, that's just
that's
incredible
the hard
in of itself.
Is to go.
You can't help it, right?
And people don't even know I was on that show. You know, when I see people today or they come to my stand-up, they don't know. You know, some of them just, one person said, I go all the way back to Grown Ups. One. I'm like, oh, was that 8 years? Like, Jesus Christ. Yeah. I did some shit before that. But I'm like, oh, you still like me? And that's all I did is fucking.
That's like someone going up to Tom Cruise going, I loved your new movie, yeah. Maverick. Will you fly?
That's how I was introduced to you. Yeah. That's it. But that's how it is. And I don't know if I answered that, Sebastian, about like, it is hard on a movie when you don't get the laughs. I mean, I can tell when Farley's being funny. I think I go, fuck, that one's going to be great. Like, I know in my head, he's getting laughs or things. It's just very hard when it's dry jokes or shit and you go, I just don't know. And then you go, they go, moving on. You're like, okay, that's it forever. Like, it's good or bad. And then when you see a rough cut and you're like, you're joking. Like, or you see the ones they didn't use and you're like, wait, what about that? And you can't even keep track because it's moving so fast. You just hope they don't circle the last one and the editor gets lazy and goes, just put that whole take in. Because in your head, you're like, the first take, the ending was good for me. The second one, the middle. And then I kind of nailed it. The fourth one, and you hope someone's picking through. And sometimes they do. But if they don't, and they just go, that take they like, that take. And then you rarely have a chance to see it and go back and change. And you might have that editing approval, and Adam would let us come in. And on the Joe Dirts and those, he would just say, that's yours, just go do it. And so that was fun. You get to pick stuff, and you live or die with it. But when it's out of your hands and you take the blame, that's tough too.
Mm-hmm. You ever reach a point in your career though where you don't even explain it anymore to people? Like you used to say, that's not the take I was with.
Yeah. Well, at this point, people like me or don't. I mean, it's really hard. They've made up their mind. So, and I appreciate you saying stuff about Just Shoot Me because that was one of my favorite things to do. I went on it late. It was already shot. They added me. They tweaked a little bit. But like, you know, if you work on a sitcom, if you get some jokes. Like I added a few jokes at the beginning and then I didn't need to. They would just, the writers sort of gravitate and go, if you can do jokes, shove him some jokes.
Yeah.
Everyone was good on the show. They gave me extra jokes sometimes. And then sometimes they would just say, and then at the end, Finch does something.
Yeah.
And then I go, what's that? And they go, just whatever you want. Just get some laughs. Just. Yeah. So then it's up to you to go, oh, and that's kind of fun. You get to try like three things. And then they go, all right, we got one. And then that show was a super fun run.
You were always funny on that show. You were expected to be too after a while. It's like we knew, like Norm on Cheers, when we were coming to you, it was be funny.
That was a lot of gift, Because, you know, when I'm at SNL, and you know this, like to have someone write for you is such a gift. At SNL, they don't. I mean, that's not their fault. That's just the way that is. So you're a comedian and you're a writer, go. No one talks to you. You just go, what do I do? Here's a legal pad. No computers. Like, I just write a sketch. Like, yep. I don't even know what the fuck. I go, I write the title like in cursive. And they're like, do whatever you want. And then they're like, if yours gets on, mine doesn't. That's kind of how it is. So everyone's trying to be nice and helpful. But there's also an underlying competition, obviously. So I'm trying to get help. But Jim Downey's busy and he'll help when he can. But he's got a million things to do. Lauren isn't really putting on his knee. I'd love to go around and say it's a toxic environment today. It's like, no shit. Like, what job did I have where any boss was, you know, burping you? Hey, are you okay today? You feeling it? They walk by and go, go fuck yourself. I hope you die and quit. And they don't care. No one cares.
No,
not like Lauren's a bad guy. That's every job in my life. Yeah. You too, I'm sure.
Of course.
And today people are like, I'm quitting my job. You don't know how toxic. When I hear toxic, I go, shut the fuck. Like, what do you mean? I was a busboy. You think they were carrying me around singing for He's a Jolly Good Fellow? They're like, hey, you fucking asshole. Get out there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, toxic, toxic. I'd like to go back and
talk. Right. No shit. That's it's toxic, so you aspire to get the fuck out of there.
That's called, my dad was toxic. Everyone, like, no one, it does feel like you can't baby everyone all the time, and then you do feel like, oh, I got to do better or whatever, but I'm not going to work. That's why you hate work. You go there and you go, and you tell your friends, isn't the boss a dick? That's just your common denominator that you get to say. But SNL was tough, and everyone's just doing their thing, and I'm trying to write sketches. I don't know how to do it. My first sketch was probably 18 pages. And then I get to read through. Everyone's like, what the fuck are you doing? I'm like, oh, now everyone comes out of the woodwork. Well, where were you? I don't know. And they're like, you don't. I'm like, I know. I'm like, please leave. I'm like, no. You got me for 4 weeks. Like, they don't even give you long contracts. It's like 4 weeks so they can cut bait.
And like, how, like, was it? We talking 2 weeks prior to that? You're playing a comedy club? Like,
yeah, I'm not even a headliner. Right? I'm fucking middle. Yeah. So I'm out there middling my ass off. But I was sort of cocky because I'm like, I'm a good middle. Then I headline the first time. They put the checks down. Everyone stops in my act. I'm like, what's going on? They go, checks go down about 30 minutes in and then literally no one listens to your act for 5 minutes.
Right.
I'm like, oh, let me go back to being a middle. That's the fucking spot.
It really is. When I would first middle in like Caroline's in New York City, I would joke on a Saturday night to the other comics, I have the best spot in the entire country tonight.
God damn.
Middling at Caroline. Like, no pressure, no nothing. Yeah, 20 minutes. Ooh,
the opener comes on for the people at home.
Yeah.
And the opener comes on, warms them up. Now they got a little few knocks, little right. Boozy Susie in the front row. And then they're ready to laugh. You kill all the premises.
any current events?
Yeah. And then the headliner gets on. And there is something when the checks go down, there's a dip. And just doing that extra 15 or 20 or 25 is just rough. Like, I thought my act was tight. I do 25. Even if I'm middle, they do 30. I go, what the fuck? What is this toxic bullshit? I don't do 30, guy. I'm a middle. You're not paying me. But I made 1,000 in the middle. Me and Schneider did at the Improvs.
Wow.
I thought I was King Cod.
That's a lot, man.
I'm like, I'm raking in a K. And then got hired and didn't do much stand-up. Wasn't a New York guy. Didn't know the clubs. You're there till 1 a.m. I'm not doing a set after 1. I don't even know where to go. So once in a blue moon, I go down with Dana or Dennis and follow them killing. They'd say, can he go on? They go, if you go on. So then Dennis would go on and I'd go on after him. So it was like a package deal, you know. We'll put this dog shit on if you go on. So I would go on and go, yeah, da, 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 da. Michael J. Fox, hey, Serge. And then get one laugh. But I didn't work on my act, which is very terrifying. To not work on your act, and then in the summers, like, I'd get a college or something, and they go, yeah, do 45. I'm like, 45 minutes? Which is actually gracious for a headliner. Like, that's the bare min. And I'm like, who's got 45? And I don't even do it anymore. So I'm bringing notes up and everyone's like, so, but you got more money. You know, you started to get recognized and going, we'll give you $3,000 for a night. I'm like, for one night? $1,000 middle? But that was the peak of my even fame of like, this is farther than I've ever even dreamed of got. Mm-hmm. I never thought I'll be on SNL 1-8. Never in a million years. I wasn't even like a character guy. I'm just like, please God, Lord, if I can do this, my crummy stand-up act and just not borrow money from people, just pay the bills. My nut when I moved out here was probably 1,500 or something, 2,500 a month. No, it was probably 1,500 a month. And I go, if I can just pay that with absolutely no problems, you fucking can't get a flat tire. You can't get a ticket. You get the shit that happens when you move to LA. So I had to borrow money from Bobcat, this comedian. He's a great guy. He helped me out with $6,000. I'm going to pay him back when I get like a little bit in the bank right now. But I'm going to wait till the strike's over. I'm going to wait till all this shit's out of the way. When I get a cushion. But then Steve Odekirk, this other comic, I couldn't pay Bob X. I borrowed from him, paid him back. Now I owed him. And then eventually got that back. But very cool. $6,000 is a lot of money to give someone. And I never wanted to owe.
You had a little Ponzi scheme going to survive when you first came out.
Comedy fucking shell game. And then I get, you know, you finally make a couple beans in your jeans and I'm always scared. So I pay it for a car. If I get a house, I try to pay it off. I don't want any of that fear that was instilled, you know. Certain points, it's hard to pay shit off, but I try to live at the means where you're in a business that no one actually gives a fat fuck about. So if there's no more me doing stand-up, the world would keep going. So if something happens and there's no, you know, like COVID happens. Yeah. Something happens you don't know about. I don't want to suddenly go, oh my God, I owe this and I owe that, you know, freak out. Yeah. It's kind of a push at that point. But I don't have a ton socked away either. But, you know, at least I don't owe the world, you know.
Yeah.
I try not to.
I want to rewind a little bit. The SNL audition, you say you're not a character guy. When you go in there and audition, are you auditioning with stand-up material? I don't necessarily know the process. I mean, I know people come in there with characters, but if you don't have any,
I didn't know this either, and it's not even a dumb question because I didn't know. All I knew is from my experience. You know, Dana Carvey auditioned at Igby's, that old comedy club. I don't know if you remember that. That was an old one before you probably got out here, but it was just a little dumpy club that's now Plan B, a strip club by... Sepulveda. Now Pico, where is it? Pico? Yeah, it was Igby's, and he went there and he said when he went into audition, Lorne came and he came in with Cher of all people. and he had to follow Rosie O'Donnell, but he said, can I go before you or something, some bullshit. And he did Church Lady. He did all these things. Now, he's 1,000% what SNL wants. And then Mike wrote him in Wayne's World. He does that. But he can grab a character, add some moves to it, you know, get some hooks, get some laughs, funny outfit, whatever. I was straight stand-up. So they got me. They just heard about me from that Young Comedian special that I talked too long about earlier. And yeah. And then Schneider, he was on that with me. So they brought us in. They brought Tom Kenny, San Fran comic, who's great. And shit, maybe Dana Gould or something. Anyway, they just brought us to New York. They looked at tapes. You get in their vicinity, you know, you get in their world. And they go, okay, we've heard about this guy, heard about this guy. Bring him in. They went to Second City, saw some people. I go to Catch Rising Star in New York. Again, never played New York. We go on, we're supposed to do, I think, 15 each. I think I did 8, I got off. I was bombing so bad.
Oh, shit.
I cut the losses. Actually, right when the party went on, so you're about to go on, then here comes all the writers, all these SNL people, Dennis Miller. I go, you're fucking kidding me. They're all, and the crowd is only 15 people anyway. So most of it's SNL. I don't know who's who, producers and shit. So they sit down and they go, all right, we got to start putting you guys up. Spade, go. And Dennis Miller's back there and he goes, Spudley. He goes, by the way, don't kill too hard. It's a fucking red flag. I go, what? Right before I walk, what? What do you mean? He goes, yeah, you know, some polished road hack, some fucking garbage that always kills everywhere. I go, so what am I doing? And they're like, 3, 2. I go, Dennis. So I go out there and I'm like, don't do good. What am I doing? But what he meant was like, they're just going to look at your writing. So I'm doing stuff. They're kind of laughing, but it's not by no means killing. I get out early because even in my head, I'm like, that's not going to work. So I just do a couple things. Michael J. Fox, you know, that's an impression. I think I did maybe Tom Petty at the end, but, you know, whatever. I'm not really a good impression. So I just did that. And then Schneider and then Tom Kenny. Tom Kenny kills. And the Dennis Miller fucking prediction came true. It didn't take him. They go, you guys write good. Why don't you guys come write for us? And you could be feature players or whatever, but we like your writing. And I'm like, and Rob was so excited and I was not. I'm like, what do? Write for these fucking idiots? I don't want to write. I don't know how to write. I barely write for myself. And then you get there and they're like, write Mike Myers something this week. I go, which one's Mike Myers? No, he's good. He can write it. I got to write for him. It's such a weird feeling. And it just really challenged you to be good because it took me 6 months to figure out how to write a sketch, you know, to not look bad at read through.
Yeah.
Where they don't go. And then I'm over there, I guess. Cut. Like they don't even like you go on the board after. So you do read through. This isn't what you asked, but you do read through 44 sketches, sweaty, gross room, one window behind Lauren. And sometimes he gets up, cracks it. It's like, it's 20 degrees. And there's Alec Baldwin huddled up. There's him and the host. And then all of us around a table. And then all hair, makeup, set. Everyone's behind them. So it's just jam packed. The stressiest, sickeningest room. And then,
damn.
And then he's like, Gap Girls. You know, when it comes in, you're like, because you're like, and then everyone looks up because they're so tired. It's 3 hours.
Yeah.
And then you're like, hey, I'm a Gap Girl. And they're like, what the fuck is this dog shit? But you're doing it. But you walk around, you go, Farley, you're a girl in this. And you know, I tell them during the week, I'm writing this stupid thing. I mostly wrote this week, I'll hang out at rehearsal together because you have to rehearse all week. So yeah. Put Farley, Adam in it, put everyone just so it's fun, Schneider. And then we'd have the guest star. You put the guest star in, the host. That's a good trick to get your sketch on. They have to be in there and they have to get laughs. And if it's a tie, give them your jokes. Because when they leave read through, they go in a room and they put them all on 5x7 cards. And it says, cold open, commercial 1, monologue, blah, sketch, and then commercial, update. And they put update bits they read and they pin them right next to update going, we like these two. And then we like these sketches and they get moved all around and they're in perfect order and they're like this. And then you wait for 3 hours outside that door. Then they just open the door and Lauren leaves and everyone and the host leaves and then you everyone gets to walk in there one at a time and you look at it and you go, you look at the show and you don't see it and then you go. The worst is it's sickeningly perfect because they didn't touch it. You want them to struggle and go, Gap Girls this week. And then they go, I don't know. And they go, put it back, put that there. But it's not even in the conversation. Now, Gap Girls did get on. That got on every time. But there's ones I wrote. I wrote Weekend Update. And sometimes Franken would kill it. And I'm like, God damn it.
Oh, man.
Because it's just so tough to get anyone on your side. And if you got one naysayer in there, Lauren would go, Spade Update is pretty funny. And Downey's like, yeah, I like it. Smigel's like, yeah. No. I'm like, Franken, you fucking buzzkill. So I don't even know that till 2 years later.
Yeah.
I go, oh, yeah, he killed it. I go, he just, you know, didn't think I was that funny, I guess. But, and that's okay, but God damn, does that cripple you.
Is it fun? I'm sorry. Is it fun? I'm trying to put myself.
Where the fun is?
Yeah, like, is it? It sounds like everything is like, oh, here's a sketch pad, and then you're like, okay, and then here's the bit. Everybody's sweating, and no one in the room, and it doesn't sound.
It's very tense, and there's moments when you de-stress, when you go, let's go eat, and we all walk down, and then Farley climbs in the cab with someone and goes, hey, going my way? And then we all laugh because they kick him out and scream because he's a huge fat person climbing in their cab. And they don't know he's famous. He's not famous yet. And then we go to dinner and we laugh and we get drunk because we're so fucking stressed. And I think I was more stressed than most because it took longer. Adam came on after me a couple months. Farley and Rock were about the same time. And Schneider got Copy Machine on, and we weren't supposed to write for ourselves. And he got that, and I was jealous.
Yeah.
It was a Stingmeister. And I was like, wait, he gets to write his own sketch? It was just so ballsy. He put it right in a read-through. And I'm like, Rob, you can't do that. All we thought every day was, we're going to get fired. If you do that, you get fired. You have to get fired. And no one was like patting on the back going, you're doing great. They were just like doing their shit. But we had great writers. The thing was, I've said it's so hard is, it's like saying, Sebastian, okay, you like to do stand-up. You're an open micer, and they go, you're a headliner now. You're on the show as a headliner. So every day you're cramming going, how do I be a headliner? And it takes so long because writing a sketch is a different muscle. I'm trying to put, you know, something for Dana, something for this. And they go, there's too many sets. Okay, so I need just one or two. Yeah, that would be better. Okay, and then the next week goes by, your sketch bombed. Why? It was too wordy at the top. Okay, oh, it didn't have the host in it. So you start learning. Start streamlining, and then shit starts to sink, and then it's fun because you go, I'm kind of getting there, and not getting fired. You're in a race, because every year they go, what about Spade? And he goes, I don't know, you know, we'll see. So I would move out of my little apartment and go back to LA and just stare at a wall, and then around August, all right, we'll bring him back. But you're never like, I'm killing it. That's why it's all humbling, because they never picked me up. Again, they just waited, and I'd move out and then drag a mat. There's no fucking Uber Eats. I'm dragging mattresses upstairs. I'm getting food. I got a new table. My room is just literally a table, a phone. I'm like, and then just write, freak out. And then until my last year there was, Lauren was like, you're pretty funny. So he let me stay an extra year. Adam and Farley left, and it was a very weird year because that was sort of my teammates, and Rock had gone. Schneider left, and I was there when Will Ferrell started, and I do remember seeing him that first week going, God, this guy's fucking funny. God, you can just tell.
Yeah.
I'm like, you don't need to know much. I saw one sketch. I go, this guy's good.
And that your last year was that you had your own segment.
Yeah.
And it seemed like it was probably a lot stress-free, right?
It was a little easier, yeah. It was actually harder to come up with ideas than I thought, but wasn't sketches, just... Lauren just goes, why don't you stay and I'll give you 5 minutes a week to do whatever you want. I was like,
oh my God, are Jesus. You kidding me? What a gift.
I know.
I mean, maybe he took every year to decide to bring you back, but I mean, who gets that kind of great. Final year?
That was great. And we all got to do a lot of fun bits, and everyone there that was still there was cool to me. But I didn't really do the sketches. So I wasn't there all the time in the chaos of it all. Yeah. I would do like a field piece. I went to a baseball stadium, or I went to get a tattoo or something. And that was fun. And they let me have one writer, and we wrote, and it was kind of a fun year.
Yeah. That was the lovely Eddie Murphy year, right? With the falling star.
Oh, it was probably right around that, yeah. That was, I don't know if that was a mistake, but in hindsight. But, you know, you're just trying to get attention. You know?
And laughs, right?
You're just trying to get laughs.
Exactly.
And that Eddie Murphy one, I remember because I thought, you know, the idea was he makes fun of everybody. but it's definitely not a two-way street. And it isn't for me. I think I left. They made fun of me about 2 weeks later. Someone played me. I'm there with Sprint. I'm like, what the fuck? Let me get out of the building. Let the body get cold. They're like, I'm the biggest idiot in the world. I go, I'm part of I think I still have an office there.
I gave that kid advice in the hallway last year.
And he waits for me to fucking eat their young. This guy came after me. And so whatever it was, but you know, and then a sitcom, and then the hard thing with people that are newer in it that do well, you see them skyrocket, that you think you gotta, it is hard to keep it going. And that's the harder part, you know, and almost the bigger you get, like when Jim Carrey came out and blew through the roof, where I was the hugest fan, still am. And Ace Ventura, Into the Mask, into like whatever the fuck another one was, I was just going, oh, Dumb and Dumber. And I'm like, you cannot get bigger, funnier. It made me laugh so hard. And then I thought, how does he keep it up? You know, and I don't really think that. I just thought, I'm sure in his head, there's that curse of like, it's like going too well. And everyone just turns over here and does this. And like right now, you know, one day you won't love Taylor Swift. And it'll happen. not right now. Yeah. Maybe down the line. Yeah. You won't go to concerts anymore. You won't go to her stuff. And all your merch will be piled up in a corner, and you'll be like, I don't even wear it barely ever. but that's hard. So I think Shandling told me, he said, you know, Seinfeld, he said, I like that career. He just, I remember he was making $1 million a year doing stand-up, someone told me. And after I smashed my apartment up, I was like, that's great, you know, because he just quietly did that every year. And he wasn't like a huge star, you know. He was just a great stand-up that was just like, they're like, oh, they're adding another show for him at clubs, you know. I did San Diego Improv with him, and they're like, we're going to add another one. They sold out all week. I'm like, this guy sold out. And I watched him, and he was rotating material. I was like, back then, comics did like 45, 45, 45. I'd work with him 6 years later. Same thing, same thing. Because it's not anywhere.
Yeah.
And now the pressure rotated. Anyway, so Shandling was like, I was always like that, just slowly getting, you know, bigger, and you could handle it in your brain. I never got that famous that fast, where it's hard to handle anyway, just people knowing you and this and that, or money or everything about it is weird. But it was always sort of slowly, so it was easier on me, you know, I think. And I don't, everyone has their different way it happens, but just to hang around is still tough.
So do you ever, do you live in fear that the next job might not come, that you go and do stand up, they might not come out? I deal with this, and I ask a lot of successful people who are in an entertainment business, is there just a confidence with you to go, yeah, I'm gonna go do stand up and people are gonna pay and see me and I'm gonna have this amount of money? Or do you go, holy shit, there better be something around the corner, or, you know, do you ever fear that it's not gonna be as good as it is?
Yeah, I mean, also you start spending more and you don't even really notice it. You're not just getting up in the morning, I'm spending so much, and if I don't even do anything, it's like there's so much going out to so many different things that I don't physically see or know. It's just, this has to go here, and this gets paid. And so you start going, and I don't live horribly. You know, I spend money, and I say, okay, if I want to do that, I got to go make it. I don't really mind working. I feel better if I do stuff. Stand up, I guess, is something we can all do, you know? But I've never done a tour, and I've never done theaters. I was always just, it had come up in the last like 5-10 years because no one I knew did that. And maybe Leno or Seinfeld or something. I never heard of that, Carnegie Hall or that shit, Dice, you know, back in the day. But in my own world, it was like, I got to do a TV show and then we're going to do a movie in the summer. It was never, I had a time to book a tour, even think about it. So I go, ooh, can I do the San Diego Improv this week? I want to go work on stuff. Oh, can I go to San Jose? That's a big room. Dallas Improv, you know, wherever. So I wouldn't make a ton, but I also wasn't building like a big stand-up audience.
Yeah.
And there's comics that I didn't know in the last couple of years that are killing it. And I said, well, maybe I should try to go out, because if I don't have a TV show right now, let me just see what that's like. And it is different. It's different to go out there. People don't know me as a stand-up, and they know me as a, what, from whatever. They know me usually, but that's not the number one thing. And so I have to sort of win them over and go to their town. Then you go, then you do a special. Then you talk about your podcast. Then you go back on the road. Then you do another one. Then you know, I'm like, fucking shit, you've done a lot of specials. It's hard.
Dogs.
And he's a guy that I was saw in the back of the Comedy Store. And, you know, you don't watch everyone. You kind of go in and out. Everyone does. And I'd sit in the back where I was with someone. And just because whoever goes on, you kind of want to just out of curiosity. And he's the one that made me laugh so hard. I was like, holy shit. Why do I not know this? This is where I was like, what am I doing? This guy's, the first guy sees better than me. I go, what the fuck? I got to get my shit together, you know? And then I go in the other room and someone's great and there's Theo killing. I'm like, hey, whoa, 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 whoa. So you sort of take your eye off the ball, and not that I'm not, I think I'm pretty good, but like someone like him, it's rare, you know, see someone that just kills it, and just an interesting style and interesting performance. So that's fun. I like seeing Theo. There's some guys that I sort of got turned on to, and it was fun to meet them or watch, and then it gets you off your ass again. It's like sitting at that read-through table, and Jack Handy writes a brilliant script, and you're like, you start to figure out, oh, that's great. But, you know, Conan's writing one, and Bob Odenkirk, and Greg Daniels from, King, you know, The Office. Right. It's they're too good. It's not fair. So I don't know that at the time, it's a handful of idiots, they're all right. And then later, it's just too many. And then Mike Myers will write his own, and then Dennis will write something, and then Kevin Nealon's a genius stand-up. And Dana, I can't even think of everybody.
I don't know, man. I think you're smarter, funnier than you think you are with the stand-up. And I think if you like really started like going for it, you'd put up something good.
I do like it. And I'm doing theaters now, and they're not the biggest, but it is fun. And when they come and I do a good job, I really like it. It's such a fucking beating. God, I just did Niagara Falls, and just coming back was 13 and a half hours door to door, you know, because that was the last one. You come back and I'm like, oh, there's a connection. I mean, look, I try not to do connections. You might have all this stuff, but you try to make it as easy as possible because it's already getting your ass kicked. And then everyone on the plane is watching, just making notes of how weird you are on the plane. Like, I'm sitting behind David Spade. He's fucking turning around his chair. You know, everything is like looked at, and you just feel like a weirdo. And when you're on the road, you know, everyone comes up. We ate before the show, and we just did New York two nights, and then we went up to, what's that place called? Wilkes-Barre.
Yeah, Wilkes-Barre.
You take a covered wagon, you go to Wilkes-Barre, and but we stopped at a casino. That was where a restaurant was picked. So I stopped by on the way, and I go in, and maybe every person in the restaurant came to get a picture during dinner, sit at my table with me. No one gives a fat fuck. Hey, man, is it cool as they're sitting down? Don't be a fucking weirdo. All right, man. All right. Hey, this way, you can get one. They okay it. No, it's fine. He's fine. No. Yeah. And how do I do it? How does my phone work?
You ever have them look at it afterwards, like as if it's not good? You're going to come back for another one?
No, they go, no. Another one. Yeah. I go, I don't give a shit what you or I look like. And then, of course, they pick the one I look like the worst. I go, hit me with some fucking filters, dude. Help me out. Help out a pal, man.
Speaking of restaurants and going up to people. This is early on when I first had moved out here. I saw you. I was with my mom and my sister, right? New to Hollywood. You walked in.
I like the way. Have these on?
This is at the Cheesecake Factory at the Grove, right? And this is when I'm like, I'm in Hollywood. I was talking about
Hollywood. It was four stars.
David Spade's here. We're the right, you know, like we felt you like we picked the right restaurant.
You're in it. Oh. You're in it, man.
He's getting potato skins too. Oh, man. Yeah, I think I saw you once, and I think I brought Chris over to say hi to you. Is that true? Chris Rock, were you at Catch?
Mm.
Were you with your wife at Catch?
God, no. Catch a Rising Star in New York?
No, at Catch the Restaurant.
Oh, Catch. Yeah, Catch.
I think that happened, but
yes,
it did. Didn't know you well, and you are sort of quiet when you go to the Comedy Store, admittedly, right?
Yeah, quiet.
So I don't know the vibe, but I'm, you know, everyone kind of goes in there, do your biz, who's up next, who do I introduce, what are their credits, you know. Everyone's pretty polite about that stuff. We know all the job you got to do. And then I think you either text me or said DM me something nice about one of the movies. It was very nice.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, well, we're okay. Because I don't know. Yeah. Sometimes, do you know this? Sometimes you don't know where you stand with them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I plow right through that, but no, I know what you're talking about. Because it is like, it's, you know, those kind of people that think about everything they say before they say it. And I'm the opposite. I'm like halfway through saying it going, hope this plays itself out.
Yeah, I kind of.
Speaking of that, do you have a problem with the environment that we're living in today, talking about what you can and cannot say? Do you have any editing at all? Sure. Or do you just...
Because I say something like that, and then I call later and say, take it out.
But don't you think... That's so fucking funny.
But it is hard because the way you talk growing up, and you just have to just keep sort of tweaking it. And we had a great run. And right. Then it suddenly was like, oh, you can't say that. Now you can't say... So, okay. But if there was something you said for what is malicious and what's not, I guess it doesn't matter. It just all is offensive. So... Yeah. I can justify things in my head growing up saying, no, it's not. I'm not like a horrible person, but I guess that's what horrible people say. I don't know.
No, I feel like there's an age thing. I literally feel like 47 and older, you're not responsible to learn any of the new shit.
No.
You know? just know we're going to be dead within 30 years and you can do all your new talk now, right? But like, I can't change now. I used the word Indian giver the other day. What am I supposed to say? So, you know, somebody who gives you something.
I never even understood what that was until someone said you can get canceled for that. I go, what does it even mean? Like, there's things where you say and you go, you didn't say it. There's someone, a guy said something on TV and he got fired. And I go, why is that bad? And then they explain it to me and I go, oh, shut up. Like, is that really? No one even connects that. But I'll tell you after.
Yeah. All
right. Yeah. Save us an edit.
Save you a fucking. But yeah, it is hard because you want to be sort of doing stuff that not everyone's doing, and you want to have your own personality. You want to say things that are actually funny and get laughs. And sometimes you got to break eggs like that in some respects. And I did 5 minutes in my special about pedophiles, and I got some flack, but not that much. But I think I do it in the goofiest way where it's not that bad. You know, like, have you ever done corporates where they go, I'm sure you do corporates, but they go, listen, first of all, we were just talking about this the other day where you want to tell them less is more. You won't believe this. I think Seth Meyers said this the other day. Less is more. You want an hour because you're paying money. You really need about 30. I'm telling you, you're fucking, people are going to hate it and it's going to go too long and you're going to go, I got my money's worth out of this motherfucker. But you just want 40, I'll even do 45. Let's meet in the middle. And if you can get away with that, it's great because sometimes it works. Most of the time it doesn't, but most of the time they bear with you. Fine. We were hoping you're a surprise guest. And if you're not the one they think, I was there and there was a rumor it was Gwen Stefani and No Doubt. And people are like, Gwen Stefani's here. I'm like, oh, fuck, that's not tonight. I was like, is she here too? And they're like, and then I get on there like, oh. I'm like, oh, is that in lieu of me? Oh, it was me instead of? Because one night I did one and it was Gwen Stefani one night, me one night, Stevie Nicks one night. I go, this is fucking great. You go out and Journey the next night. And they were playing Journey. They were like, this tomorrow night is Journey. Don't forget. And then when I went on, I go, enough bullshit about Journey. We're going to live for tonight, guys. I'm here tonight. Quit promoting tomorrow. They're stuck here. They're going. Why are the flyers? Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's your own company.
Just want to let
it's
you
mandatory.
Know what you were this close to seeing instead, baby.
Get through tonight and tomorrow is Journey.
Oh, that's right. Oh, it's a four-day event.
Yeah.
So they say,
here's great. No pressure for you. Hey, if you don't like me, don't worry. Tomorrow you're going to be singing Don't Stop Believing.
I go, look at this motherfucker like this. You're not Journey. So they say, can you keep it clean? You probably hear this. This is just the most common thing in corporate dates. And you go, literally, I will say fuck five times and no one even knows it because they had one guy there talking about eating pussy for a half hour. And that's what they mean. Just say that. You're not like filthy, like offensive, like everyone's running to HR. If you're just saying, and you slip it in, just the tone is lighter. They don't get that either. They don't get that. That's not flipping people.
What? One employee.
That offended me.
One employee,
cut
right?
That out.
Yeah. See what I'm saying? Right. And you also bring up a good point in that, and I forget, you know, because I do stand up, but I'm not like, I didn't do all these movies. It's like, you're kind of iconic. So when you're done performing and you're on a plane, I mean, you got to itch your nose. Somebody saw that. You know, you blow your nose, you don't have a napkin. Oh my God, Spade used his hand. Like, they're watching you.
Yeah.
But yet, you know, you don't have like goddamn Elon Musk money where you're not going to fly private. So instead, you're like just the hamster in the glass
cage.
Well,
when I do tours, I try not to fly private because it just eats up too much, unless you're sponsored. But I don't really mind all that stuff. I'm sort of used to being Oogle and people more like RoboCop, really analyzing how tall is he? How does he look like? He'll beat him.
Yeah, I was thinking
just
too.
Everything about this motherfucker.
Really good hair. When I thought
the hair they combed for the last thing I just did.
A little something in there would be a nice touch, bro.
What do you want in there?
Something, you know, just to give it a little more, like.
Is it too, looks well, too perfect?
No, I could tell, like a slick back look with something there would be great for hosting the show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it is, snake oil. Yeah. I think you're trying to cut me down. I can't get it, though. But I'm
cut you down?
I don't get it. I'm taking it as a compliment.
No, you have great hair. Okay, I swear to God, bro. Are you kidding me?
Because well, he gave me never... a little something. I'm like, well, no, I don't get what that part is.
No, let me translate.
Yeah. Yeah. I use a hair wax.
What he would like for you to do,
yeah, okay.
Given the hair that you have,
yeah.
is you put some product in
there. No, I'm saying I bet when you do, I would imagine you
do. Oh, now it's when.
No, I don't even have any. Dude, I have hairspray. I'm straight. But anyway,
Moroccan oil.
Oh, Moroccan oil. I know what that is. But you have good hair. Yours isn't going anywhere.
Yeah, but yours with a little Moroccan oil.
No, yours.
Kurt
Russell's the fucking king.
See it again.
You talk about Jim Carrey, and you've been around all these talented people your whole career. Who is the funniest guy that you've ever been around? Like, you're like, this guy's, like you said, Jim Carrey. But I'm talking about around a
table,
dinner yeah. or whatnot. Is there a guy that you're like, this guy, every time I get together?
You know, I have to say, phone calls is Chris Rock.
Just on the phone?
When he just calls out. He's the only one that calls from a block number. And I go, it's got to be him because I gamble because if it's not, I'm fucked. You know? But I just go, yo, and he goes, so I'm at dinner. He just goes right into whatever he's talking about.
Yeah.
And he just tells me the funniest stories that are you can't tell. I would probably go back to Farley. I hate to say it because it's too easy, but everyone agrees. Like, it's just, there's so many right now I hang out with, and I usually don't hang out with anyone that doesn't have some, even dating girls, they don't have to be like Robin Williams, but if they sort of have a lightness and a fun thing to them, I like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or they laugh, or they... there's sort of a charm. It doesn't, they don't have to be Henny Young, you know, doing one liners. That's not really what I mean, but I like that feel with people, and they're kind of upbeat. And he was really funny. Another weirdo, Farley was just funny and very likable and always like a puppy trying to make you laugh, grabbing you and then wanting you to make fun of him and then just doing bits nonstop. And then Norm is funny. Norm is a very weird,
I feel you'd say that, yeah.
very weird, humor that makes you infuriated sometimes, or when you watch him, he goes, I spend the first 10 doing great and then an hour bombing. I go, I think it's the other way around. I think you bomb until everyone gives up and then you start doing your act. I'm like, what are you doing? Because he almost takes pride in eating it. And he's like, sometimes I do it on purpose. I go, why? Do you know what our job is?
Yeah.
I go, I get it that you're like a crazy genius, but the audience is paying, like we're on that Sandler tour. Those tickets, I don't know how much they are, but everyone's doing great. And then Schneider one time, because Schneider and Norm used to argue all the time, especially on the group chat. And we're like, we're in Seattle, and Norm kills in Portland. Comes up in Seattle, does not do well, just because he's dragging, he's telling like a Johnny went to school joke for 15 minutes. We're on the side like this. And we had to follow, you know, I'm like, I got to follow this one. So he gets off and then Schneider goes, all right, Norm MacDonald, you never know what Norm you're going to get. And tonight you got that one. And then on the group chat, he goes, hey, fuck you, Rob, for that Seattle bullshit. And Rob immediately like, well, what are you doing? Like, doesn't back off at all. Come on, we got to follow that shit. That's hysterical. So he is funny. Adam's always pretty upbeat and a good mood. And he likes to joke. He likes to call. He likes to text funny shit. So I like that under the pressure he's under in his life of things, he still tries to keep it loose, because at a certain point, it's just like a fucking huge machine.
Man, can I ask you this as we wind down here?
Yeah.
I always put the wind down because it alleviates some of the pressure.
Puts
here.
Me in relaxes.
Yeah, and you go, okay.
I go, there might be a fucking end in sight. I'm texting Heather. Did you tell him about the hard out? I have to be at Jimmy John's in 12 minutes. Check ways.
We just started having guests on the show. We've been doing this for 10 years. No guests, but we decided.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, guests come in. Now, over the 10 years, we've talked about many of people on the show, but one person that keeps coming up is Tom Cruise. Have you ever been around this man? And if so, is it...
If so, walk me through it.
What's the experience? Have you?
I have, yeah. And the experience is, first of all, I used to get jealous because one time Sandler had dinner with Tom Cruise and Jim Carrey about 10 years ago. And I was like, God, you motherfucker. Like, what could be more fun? Like, he's on some secret chain where they talk. Jim Carrey, I can talk to. And he wound up being, we're more friends now than we were then. I just didn't ever saw him. But I've always sort of thought he was really funny and just so interesting. And then the Truman Show and all that shit. So Tom Cruise, I have seen, and it's true that he, you know, you make fun of him, there's a million jokes about him, but goddamn, when you're right with that guy, he's a movie star. And he shakes your hand, looks you right in the eye, takes off his fucking Ray-Bans, I don't. And and just, you're the only guy in the room. He just talks to you, you're so fucking funny, and but you did this and this. It's like he's been briefed on me. I just see him.
Wait, hold on. Where is this happening?
I go, where's the earpiece? This guy? Which one? Okay. I don't know. Has a hat on sometimes? So,
Falling?
Oh, yeah. And then I saw him one time when Grown Ups was going up against Night and Day. You know what that movie is?
Oh, yeah.
Tom Cruise.
Cameron Diaz. Yeah, it was a good one.
So they're like, Night and Day is coming up, and I love Cameron Diaz. And I go to Soho House, which I never go to, and I'm having dinner, and I'm with two people. And I have my back to this booth. I come back and they go, can you fucking not be a total star fucker for a second? And I go, tell me. And they go, no, because you're going to say something because you had two drinks and there's no stopping you. And I go, I won't say one thing. And they go, Tom Cruise is sitting behind you. They go, wait a second. I go, I'm going. And they go, think of a game plan, anything. I go, none, just like you, none. He had his motorcycle helmet on the chair and he's sitting.
Oh, wait a minute.
Oh, my God. Fucking Cupid. Boing. Yeah.
What else would he have? What else would he have, Spade?
Yeah, what a stud. And I go, hey, man. Big night tomorrow because we were going up against the movie.
See, but that's you. That's legendary you. Like the guy in the cafeteria yelling at the bully.
Just trying to be, because I met him before and he was nice and he goes, sit down. And then he goes, I don't know. I think you guys are going to take this. I've been looking at stuff. I wasn't even saying it to say anything like it. I was just trying to start talking to him. Super nice.
They're alone?
He's there alone. I think he's waiting for someone. I'm like, you better be because there's no reason I'm leaving. So,
who makes Tom Cruise wait?
I don't know. I go, who's?
I want to meet that person.
Who's this punk bitch? Yeah, I actually left on my own volition. Is that a word?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just said, like, I'll leave him alone. So I went back. Hey, it's so weird. You go like this. You go, okay. And I just turn to the other side of the booth. He was on this side. So I just had to go, weep. So I sit there and I go, oh, God, he's fucking cool. But you know what I never do? Ask anybody for their number. Do you think this is weird asking a guy for their number? I don't like it.
Well, how do you?
I wouldn't ask Tom. There's no reason to. But I have so many people ask me for my number. It's so ballsy to me. They go, hey, I used to see you at this fucking club. And I'm in a restaurant. I'm like, oh, yeah. Hey, man. Yeah, no, I used to go there all the time. You would go there. You had your buddy with the blonde hair. Yeah. Hey, you still have that old number? Which number? 310. And I'm like, I don't even know what to do. I'm like a girl. I'm like, and then half the time I just give it to him because the first time I gave someone the wrong one, he goes, all right, where's your phone? It's not ringing.
Oh,
what did I give you? Oh, every number was wrong. it's almost impossible. I got none of the numbers right. And then, so I don't know what to do. I freeze. I feel like that's a, and if I ask a girl, it's someone like Brad Pitt, right? Well, that's starting too high, but even regular, just celebrity types, I would feel so weird. Hey, it's such a weird.
Did you pull back because if Brad Pitt asked you for your number, you would think in your head, well, that would actually be okay.
Oh, I'd make out with him. I'd be like, well, you know we're dating now. No, I've seen Brad over the years, and he's always super cool. Another one like Tom Cruise, where superstar, couldn't be better looking, couldn't be fucking cooler, feel weird for his life because you talk about the stares that guy gets. Just, he couldn't handle the planet being that good looking. Then you add in he's a millionaire. Add in he's a superstar. So the fact that you figure out there's almost nowhere to go. He sort of slinks around motorcycle also, and he slinks around and does his life. But 7-Eleven, I mean, you don't even know me. What if you're Brad Pitt? Like, the slowdown of, like, he can't even turn his head. Just you connect eyes with that guy, and everyone goes, wait, is that? And so that's his whole life. So if you see him in a contained situation where everyone's being pretty cool, I think, and he's the coolest guy in the world, and he talks and bullshits. The Tom Cruise theory I have is he goes movie to movie because it's a fake world where he can live and everyone's normal around him. It's like he's at the Grove, but everyone's not shitting their pants. So he walks on the movie set and everyone's like, hey, Tom, or they don't talk to him. Everyone just does their business like you're on a movie. Everyone's got their shit to do. Guys, and he's just, and then everyone talks, he goes to his trailer, and no one's weird to him. And the second you walk out, everyone's like, what the fuck, it's Tom Cruise. And then I'll get a picture. FaceTime, my friend. And so I think he likes me. He feels like a normal person. That's my stupid theory.
Wow, no, maybe you're right.
Something to it.
Yeah, maybe that's why he's always skydiving. The sky is the only place where nobody tries to bother him. Shit.
And then another guy drops down filming. Can you do a video of my friend? No. Are we doing it? Yes.
Listen.
Yes.
We know you're a busy guy.
We're at the halfway mark.
No. Listen, we know you gotta go.
Heather, we've got that thing. I'm just going to put my car neutral and go down the hill. We're literally at the top of LA right here.
All right,
we're
going
to split this cast episode up to five segments.
Yeah,
we're 24. We're good for New Year's. You know what? You know, before you do leave.
Yeah.
I find something that no one ever, not I've never seen it before, but you do it on a consistent basis. We communicate through Instagram, right? Yeah. You don't even write. This guy he does voicemails. Like,
yeah.
I get a voice message from him for a minute.
Oh,
and
that's nice.
And then my question to you is, when you send a voicemail to me, are you thinking I'm going to send one back? Is that preferred?
I don't ever know what to do. I don't want it to sound flirty. I mean, to talk is weird, but I can't type that fast and I have to go back and fix it. It's easy just to say something and move on with your life, or driving is safer. I don't need you to say it back. If you just answer, it's good.
Okay, that's my wife. I go, I got a voicemail from David Spade. Now,
what's the protocol?
Yeah, do I voice back or is it okay to type?
She can do it for you if you want. Hey, Sebastian's eating his noodles right now. But he wanted you to know all systems go for the podcast. You know, that would be good. But I voice text too, which might be infuriating, but it's so much easier to get all the inflections right just because you're just talking.
But we'll never know a voice text from you because after that, I'm not asking for your number.
I'm too scared to now.
So yeah, thank you for coming here. We really do appreciate it. And can we get a photo with you?
100%.
Snake oil.
Where do we do it? Right,
yeah.
Like this.
Yeah, right here.
2, 3. We do it. Bam, bam, bam.
And
bam,
then after bam. That, we do a thing where you get on the roof and clean the gutters.
The show has ended.
Hey, you fucking asshole, get out there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, toxic, toxic. I'd like to go back and
talk. Right. No shit. It's toxic, so you aspire to get the fuck out of there.
That's called, my dad was toxic. Everyone, like, no one.